That'd be cool.
We're live. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Nerdy Up North podcast. It's a nerdy podcast hosted by and all the nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam.
And I am the other host, Paul.
And joining us this week, we have the fangirl in Dallas herself, the busiest woman in pop culture, Taffeta Darling.
Hello, hi, thank you so much. I'm so stoked to be doing this again. The first time was delightful, and I was like, if you guys ever want to talk about the fucking Batman, I'm in. So hooray.
Definitely. And you are, as Sammy said, the busiest lady in nerdism or fandom or whatever type of dumb there is, because it's taken us
All
that long
the
it's taken us that long to try and get you back on, because we had such a blast last time. And I know Sammy was worried for this episode. She's going, how am I going to top that opening that I gave Taffeta last time?
I have never given anyone else the same kind of treatment like I did for you.
That's so appreciative. It's still one of my favorite things, and like that it doesn't need to be topped. That's perfect. Like I think whenever I die, just play that, you know, as my casket gets lowered into the flames for
with
the
my northern
furnace.
drawl, oh yeah.
Please. Please. Well, like ideally I kind of really want like a pyre. Like I want like my own like Viking funeral.
All
So
right.
they're illegal in the US, so you know,
Right.
maybe by this time they can just ship my body to y'all and you can like
Just get the
what, set you
Winchester.
on fire?
Just go
Set
all
me on fire and
supernatural
you
style.
know.
They used to do it all the time on the Winchesters, but
With
yeah.
your blazing intro, you can use that again.
Certainly. And
And
sorry,
at the
Taffeta.
end, Taffeta
Please,
Darling,
dude, shoot the arrows too. That'd be great. Like I have like four or five people in mind who are terrible arrow shooters, so I think it'll be
Oh.
a great thing for them to miss a few times. It would be
If
awkward.
you ask me, I'm just throwing that arrow. Like there's no way that I am even trying. It's just getting
Mazel tov.
thrown. Yeah.
There you go.
And not just like say thank you for coming on as a guest, but thank you for being such a huge supporter of us as well. I know, like say you've given us a lot of opportunities as well, and it's nice to say it
Oh.
face to face, a big thank you for everything that you've done for not just like say Nerdy Up North, but us personally as well. And it's nice to have an
Absolutely.
American friend every so often though. So again, big thank you.
Absolutely. Thank y'all for, you know, being supportive of us too, and you know, for all the random things that I do. So no, it's mutual. I adore you guys. Like if you guys ever need an American to come sit on your carpet like a cat for a
I've
week, let
told
me
you
know.
the couch is free. You are more than welcome.
Definitely.
Then I'm definitely gonna be looking on that because that's one of my goals by the time I'm at least, you know, in the next year or so. I've never been to Europe, so I
Right.
or the UK,
Yes.
which so I want to
You're
get
in
out there.
for
So thank
you're
you.
in for a treat.
Definitely. But yeah,
Yeah.
so Sammy, do you want to get the disclaimer out the way? I know this is going
Oh
to be a bit of a
yeah.
different, just because it's going to be our opinions on the bat, but it is our opinions after all.
That's true. So everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us on our Facebook page. You can join us on the Nerdy Up North Discord or the comment section where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong, because we can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behavior out of her nerdism.
Very well said.
Heck yeah.
Thank you, Binks.
And Sammy having her own Selena Kyle moment there. So
I don't even know if anyone could see him like leaning over and just staring at us.
the cat was saying, yes, you're doing well, mummy, it's fine.
Oh, it was so cute though last week. I totally forgot to tell Brian that my cats do tend to walk around from time to time, and he just kept going, "A cat, another cat." I was like, "Oh, yep, there you
That's me.
go.
That's
Get
definitely me.
used to
What's your
it."
cat's name?
Yes.
Screw
So,
Batman. Let's talk about cats.
yes. But that's the thing. Since I think we'll float the idea of getting Taffeta around to talk about Batman for a long time, and we've held off talking about the man, the Dark Knight, just till we could get Taffeta on, just because I love Batman. I've got like, say, I think I know some stuff about Batman, but Taffeta's knowledge is far above what I would even see, and her love of the bat, and not just Batman, just the Batman universe, like, is so inspirational. Because every time you do like an Instagram live or a live thing where I manage to jump on, I think I kind of like railroaded the conversation just to have a little bit of conversation about Batman with you, because it's so
I've thought
fun
about
and so interesting as well. But
that.
the one question I'm going to ask, I don't think I've asked you this: how did you get involved in the bat? Where was your first like what was your first kind of times? learning of Batman or seeing Batman? Was it the comics? Was it one of the shows? Or was it a movie?
As Batman 89, that was my first exposure to Batman. And by that time, I was already reading like Archie comics and stuff. That was kind of my thing. But my brother, like, I have an older brother who's 6 years older than me. And, you know, universe bless him. Like, I was annoying. And everything he did, I wanted to do because I was the youngest child. And I saw all the cool stuff he got to do. So I mimicked him immensely. And so, yeah, I went to see Batman 89 with him. Right. And that was kind of cool. And I was like, oh, I love this character. But I was also kind of watching him, you know, and he loved it. So I became obsessed with the Joker. I became obsessed with Jack Nicholson. Right. But then it was a few years later that Batman the Animated Series came out. And I was like, oh, okay, now it's a cartoon. And then a little bit after that, I was like, what the fuck? It's a comic? I mean, I didn't say that as a kid. But, you know, I was like, there's books about Batman. And so it was kind of that. So, you know, thank you, Tim Burton and Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson and everyone involved with that. And especially Michael Uslan, the big producer and has the rights to Batman, who actually took us away from kind of the campy stuff and gave us the universe that Tim Burton is. So yeah, sorry. Yeah. That is
one of the perfect answers though. So that's fine. Interesting you say it, because I am known on this podcast and known within my friends for not being a fan of that Batman, which is strange because I love all things to Batman, I do like that Batman. I like Michael Keaton as a Batman. I like the thing, but I do have issues with Jack Nicholson's Joker. That is a personal choice, just because, as I said, I've backed up that argument to the hilt. But yes, Sammy, what was your first experience of Batman?
Ghostbusters.
Right.
Serious answer. I am a huge Ghostbusters fan. Everyone knows this about me. And I had a VHS of Ghostbusters 1 and 2 together. And in the middle of that, to separate the movies, was an episode of Batman 66. I used to watch constant. Yeah, no, it's so random as well.
That's so cool.
It was a black and white one too.
Right.
Oh, it was like the serial stuff,
It wasn't even in colour. So that's how I discovered Batman. But in all honesty, I only watched the Batman movies that was not Nolan's in the last, how long have we been doing this podcast? 4 years?
Right.
4 years. In the last 4 years. Yeah, that's a true story. But I have been reading Batman since 2014.
Yes. And Sammy famously, when we went out on a shopping strip, wambling around Newcastle, going, which Batman comic should I pick? Which one should I take up with things? So I just instantly slapped her in the face with the Long Halloween and went, this is the one you need. This one will give you a feel of what is Batman type thing in my eyes. But it's interesting you're saying like the serial, was that the, because that wouldn't have been the 66, it was black and white, that would have been the serial with, was it would either be Lewis Wilson or Robert Lowley, I think, who played Batman first.
No, it was Adam West.
Was it? All right.
It was definitely Adam West. Okay. But it was definitely in black and white as well. It was not coloured, because I remember getting a shock seeing it in colour on Channel 4 for us UK people when Batman used to be on there.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I always remember that. I could have fast forwarded it. I just never did. Right. I always used to watch it, but that tape got played to the death, to where it was no longer. I could no longer actually play it anymore.
Yeah,
thank God for DVDs.
See, I was lucky because from a kid, my grandfather used to get me to watch all the Sunday serials. So we used to get the Land of the Giants, and one of the things that he used to make us watch was the Adam West, the 66 version, which I was obsessed with. Like, I was mesmerized by Cesar Romero's The Joker. Like, absolutely unbelievable. Like, the colors, the pow, the humor and everything, that kind of, like, brought me on. Then, as Taflis, like, mentioned, I learned about the comics. The first comic I ever read was, funny enough, because when they used to bring out a Batman movie, they used to bring out a graphic novel before they released the film. So you used to get spoilers. So, because there wasn't internet, so you used to just get spoilers through, like, say, getting the graphic novel. And I remember getting the Batman, the Tim Burton Batman comic first, going, oh, this looks amazing. The colour's great. And then tried to go and see the movie and got denied because I was too young. because the age limit over in the UK, I think it was a 15, and I think I was only 12 when it was initially released. So I was like trying to get into the cinema, and unfortunately I got knocked back. So I had to wait for the cinema the video release, which in the people always like laugh now because a movie comes out, it's out released streaming within 6 months. Six weeks or even a couple of weeks. We had to wait half a year or even a year for the release after it was hit the cinema. So waiting all that time to see The Batman and then seeing it. And again, not to do Jack Nicholson's Joker dirty, just wasn't the Joker I was expecting. It wasn't kind of... because with Batman and the Joker's just there to cause chaos. That was always the joke. I was kind of like the thing, but this was kind of like a mobster. This was like he wanted power and like and money and stuff like that. I was like, that's to me. I couldn't get my head around it. That's why I always had problems with that version of the joke. But coming back, watching Batman Returns with Danny DeVito as like the Penguin, to me, that's when I hit Batman like life. That was like my ultimate Batman experience when I got to watch that for the first time. That was like seeing it on the big screen. But going back before that, the first Batman movie I ever saw was the Adam West Batman the movie.
And yeah!
I remember this so well because it used to be on TV and seeing all these different villains ganging up and doing it. But this is the one that gets the piss taken out of it so much just for two elements into it. One, the bat bomb, seeing Adam West running around with the Batman in his hands, and then the bat shark, sorry, the shark with the bat, the shark repellent in his bed. So seeing that, like, say, and watching that on the big screen as well was an experience. But what about you? Like, other than seeing the Tim Burton, like, what was your feelings towards the Adam West Batman as well? Did you take that one to heart? I know you mentioned the campy Batman, but to me, that was the fun Batman.
I was one of the daycares I went to. That was one of the shows that was on in the background, and it never connected for me. So that was like kind of, I guess, my first exposure to Batman. I think, but like, I didn't watch it. Like the people, like the teachers. That was what was on, like in their break room or whatever.
Yeah.
But for me, I never really got into the Adam West stuff, and I think it's because I went straight into the, you know, the dark stuff. I'm a broody little girl. Like, you know, I love color like everywhere else, you know. But for me, like, it was too bright. It was too much, I guess. After being exposed to like the brooding, you know, moody stuff.
Yeah.
Like my Batman, you know, he didn't dance. What the fuck?
The Bat-toosie.
Yeah, there's no Bat-toosie in my Batman universe. Well, I appreciate it now as an adult, but back then, whenever you know, I was getting into that stuff, it wasn't anything. But I was also very punk rock and outwardly and inwardly, and so just the whole style of it just didn't appeal to me at the time. Now, you know, I can watch it and I can enjoy it, but you know, I'm very melancholy, and so at the time anything that was like super colorful, unless it was like depressing colorful, I was in. But
I'm still there, like I haven't quite gotten out of it yet. And I'm 42 this year.
Yeah, 45, so I get it. Yeah, 2 months, 45. So yeah, I appreciate it. And but I've always been more of a detective.
Yes, there was not much detecting in that.
It was like partying and like, you know, girl chasing, which is totally cool. You know, like I would have loved to have been Poison Ivy or Batgirl or you know, one of the cat, you know, women. But I just give me some detecting, give me some, you know, brutality, you know, let me see Batman doing some damage, and that just didn't appeal to me, so I didn't get into it until much later.
No, I'm surprised Sammy hasn't been a fan, because like I know he wasn't a regular character, but in the original Batman there was one of Sammy's favorite people in the show, a certain Vincent Price.
I knew that.
Yeah.
I did know that. I only know that as of recent, because I have an unauthorized but yet slightly authorized Vincent Price autobiography.
Oh, cool.
he wrote little snippets for it. But I only know that recently. There's a lot of things that I'm learning about Vincent Price that I'm only known recently.
Yeah.
Batman just what he wasn't He-Man basically growing up, so it wasn't he wasn't my thing. But when I said I watched the Batman movies in the last 4 years, Batman Returns is one that I have seen since it came out.
Yes. Because
I have adored that film since it came out, but I, for some reason, watching the 89 one never appealed to us. I was like, I don't particularly care, and I didn't particularly care about the Schumacher his ones. I was like, I don't particularly care about that. Now I love them. Like my whole Batman, my Batman has changed. He will forever and always be Val Kilmer, because of you know what it probably helped watching with adult eyes. I don't think I would have gotten it as a kid. I'm too dumb. Like, if they're not chasing ghosts, then I'm not interested.
But yeah, because I think Batman Returns came out and it was such a shock to the system, I think, because there wasn't many movies like that. As you said, how gothic, how dark, and it wasn't like trying to pretend to be anything else as well. And there was very much like a comic book feel to it as well. And the changes they made, like with the Selina Kyle character and how her origins changed, it went very thing. And then Oswald Cobblepot's origins as well. But I don't think they'll ever cast anyone like for the Penguin, even though Colin Farrell was unbelievable in the new show. But if you're going to go back to like the comic, the feel, Danny DeVito as a Penguin in Batman Returns is probably the pinnacle of movie casting that we've had in a long time.
Absolutely. Well, just that character in general, just the Penguin, like they did a really good job of like humanizing him and giving us some sympathy, because we do get that backstory. We do get, you know, a little bit more about the tragedy, you know, and rather than like this monster that is kind of like, you know, developed like from a young age. And I think that's one of like the things that I liked about that movie. And I can look back and see the different portrayals of the different villains. You've got, you know, a very performative, sexy, sensual, like Catwoman that comes out, you know, and she's very empowered by, you know, saying fuck you to the man, which is always a good thing. No offense.
That's fine. I'm not the boss in this, so don't worry.
But you know, there's a sympathy that I feel for Oswald at different times, but then you know he does a really good job of just like, you know, switching because he's a fucking villain, you know. And to play off the Colin Farrell thing, there's that as well, because that series was so magically done. That character, the way they incorporated him into, you know, the Reeves Batman movie as like, you know, kind of this like bumbling guy, and that's not what we have seen previously. And you know, he is very smart, and I just love how it does have its own kind of arc from Batman Returns into the Reeves stuff with the Penguin.
No, it's definitely just to talk about like say the Matt Reeves Penguin that we got, because it is quite recent. It feels like only yesterday, but it was like a few months ago when we got that show that came out, and it had no fucking right being as good as it was. Like let's be honest, I was expecting something decent, but really? It was on the level of the Sopranos for TV show. Like, because so Sopranos good. Is up here for me, like TV, like watching, but I've rivaled it. Like, I was engrossed from week and week. I didn't know where it was going to go. It shocked me in places. That ending as well. Like, again, spoilers if you haven't watched it. Like that.
Yes, spoilers. Yes.
But
like, yes. What? Sorry. It's like, oh my god, yes.
Guardians too.
Like,
I just get really excited because they could have gone a different way with that, which you expect it to go, but they didn't. And I was like, fuck yeah, that's what you do. You keep that shit going.
Yeah.
Ah, so good. I got goosebumps all over my legs thinking about that. Just so you
know. It's just like when a show lands and knows not to overplay it, not to overstay its welcome. Because if the, like with certain shows, like especially like not to say American TV shows, they go for like 24 episodes or 22 arcs. This felt nicely paced. It lived in that world that was like, say, starting to build with like, say, the Batman, which I loved. That I loved the creation that it was, and that Gotham felt like a Gotham that like was very real, and I remembered that Gotham from the comics as well. That's why it kind of like felt homely to me, but the difference playing out given these side characters so much more. And like, we've met some of the, we met Sophia from the comics, like say The Long Halloween and as such, and like the two rival families, you know, there was that tension, but to see it played out the way it was just like, this is so fucking good. And having Oswald playing it kind of like between them two, and just what an odious character, because just when they start thinking, oh, I'm starting to feel something, I'm starting to kind of like get a reaction from him as well, they change it up and they kind of like bring you back, and you think, oh yes, you are the most hideous and horriblest human being that is in this world. And it just makes you feel like this is how you do get around or get something in Gotham, in the city. This is why the city needs someone like Batman to dress like a bat, like a vigilante, to try and not, like, as we found out at the end of like Matt Reeves's thing, not to fear, but for hope. It was just so interesting. And I know, like, again, fuck the spoilers, when he killed the guy that's been helping him at that end, it just broke your heart even more, and it kind of left you
with the kid.
I mean, exactly, that's where you have this like sympathy for the pain, and then he reminds you again he's a fucking villain, and you find out he had actually killed his brother.
Yes.
I only watched one episode. I have never there's been times where Paul has texted and said, you've got to watch this, it's really good, and he'll just leave it at that because he knows what I'm like. I will say a yes and not do. This one, he pushed and pushed and pushed and kept going, you have to watch it, it's absolutely brilliant. I think I watched the first maybe two episodes and it was really good. It's just me and my, you know, can't concentrate on something for too long. I didn't get fixated on it, so I didn't continue watching it. Now I feel like too much time has passed and I'm like, I'll probably go back to it in a few years' time. Mm-hmm. That's just
The second season's going to be coming out soon, so it'll be a perfect time to catch up if you ever have a day to binge.
I have many days to binge. That's my problem.
Back as well. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was like, yeah, just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying. It's a very beautifully done series. Mm. It's cinema. It's very art house, and it's very good at bringing in the complex like drama that is Gotham, because I think one thing that it does right, or that Matt Reeves does right, is that Gotham is its own character. Like, we have all these side characters, but Gotham the city itself is like a character, it's a main character that gets kind of like forgotten about, but when you can incorporate Gotham itself, and not just the people, but like its look and its beauty and its darkness and its grossness, and it's like, you know, the stylized territory of everything, you know, from the Waynes to, you know, where the Falcones are, and Falcones, you know, there's, it's just beautifully done. It's art house, it's cinema, I love it.
Yes, and it's one of those shows where, because Batman like has a presence, Batman, like you mentioned, Batman, everyone knows, doing a show in that universe that I think it needs to have Batman to have life, by even halfway through the first episode, you don't even remember what Batman's name is. It takes that aspect out where you think, I'm watching a Batman show that doesn't need Batman, and that's so crafted and so beautifully done. And as you said, with Gotham itself, it breathes and stuff. And how they incorporated it into the Batman movie as well was so cleverly done and made you think about, because we always make jokes like, oh, when superheroes have a fight, the destruction and stuff they cause, it's kind of just like swept away and like, ooh, nothing else happens. Like,
how much did that cost the city?
There's a major terrorist act that went on with the Riddler in the Batman where he flooded half the city. And normal, like if it went to Batman 2, it'd be like, the city's cleaned up. It showed you the ramifications and the effects that it had, not just on Gotham, but the public and the people and like how they lived after that. That's again, smart. Was such a strong message and such a beautifully way of like continuation that story. I was just like, wow, it left me just like, as you said, with goosebumps just by thinking that. And it will be something that normally you'll watch a show like that and you'll think, oh, I'll watch it once and I might not go back to it. That will go back through a watch along. Like, I'll probably even watch Batman, the Batman, then instead of going the Batman. And watch the show afterwards, just because it's that great of a continuation.
Yeah, I'm really hoping we get like a Batman's No Man Land, because they've essentially already established that Gotham is flooded and it's not inhabitable. And so it should essentially kind of be, if if everything that, you know, we saw in that movie actually happens and stuff like that, it's going to be a while. And that's kind of where I was left with it. I was like, oh my God, this is a great setup for No Man's Land. And that's essentially what happens, is that, you know, the United States just like puts them to the side and then leaves them abandoned. And like, there's even less lawlessness, even more lawlessness. Yeah. And so like all the different villains just start taking over, and we've already got, the Penguin, we've already got, you know, the Joker in Arkham, and it's like, okay, so what happens to Arkham? Like, if everything is flooded, is it not to be assumed that that's going to happen to Arkham? So you're going to have Black Mask and Two-Face and all these other people come out, and you know, maybe we start seeing Huntress. I don't know, like, I'm just really excited. Like, was that destruction of the end of that movie leaves so much open, and with Matt Reeves at the base of it and helm or whatever, I'm stoked because I trust in him more than I have a lot of the other Batman people, and I really, really hope he gives us Mr. Freeze. Like, I know that's not really like super tied into that, but in the universe he's built, that's, people ask me, what would you like to see? I want Mr. Freeze. Like,
that's the, like, one that they have hinted at.
Interesting.
And again, I did mention this to Brian last week. There has been rumors kicking about in the last 2 weeks that Matt Reeves has walked away. I don't know. The only, like I said, I've heard whisperings, because I know with the James Gunn DC universe, this was supposed to be like an Elseworld where it's going to be separate. But apparently he loved the Penguin so much, the show, that he's doing his best to incorporate that Batman universe into his DC. But if, from looking at the Superman trailer this week, that world is a different... So,
would it not maybe work with James Gunn's? Could he not incorporate it?
It could, but
it could if he does the Elseworld things to where it gets rebuilt, and then we have just like this dark leftover Gotham, you know, like, or the No Man's Land to where it does some sort of incorporation. But it, I guess if Gunn really wanted to have that juxtaposition, like, he has a very, very bright, colorful Superman, and this Batman is so dark and deep that actually would really work to have this amazing world's finest if you put them together. So my first thought is like, no, it wouldn't work, but now I'm like going through it in my head, I'm like, actually it would fucking work, because that is such a stark contrast between those two characters that I think having those different worlds, even if they are in the same you know, planet or whatever, because that's how the comics are, like, you can go to, you know, Metropolis and it's, everything's cheery and it seems like normal sometimes, you know, but at least it's a functioning society with the sun, but with Gotham, like, there's not,
where's the
it's just dark. All
Where's
those towers are blocking the sun and they're just, you know, deteriorating. So I think maybe, I don't know, that's another thesis for another
just,
time.
Just out of interest, who would you have as Freeze? As in a casting now?
Would it be weird to say Ralph? Was it like Ralph Fiennes?
No.
No, it would not.
I was actually thinking of a British actor as well, Mark Strong.
I do like Mark Strong. Like, I feel Mark like Strong? Those. He was a Red Lantern, and he was in Kick-Ass 2?
He was in Kick-Ass 2. He was in, he does all the Guy Ritchie movies.
Sorry, my phone's just shouted. Oh my God, I pressed the voice note thing. Yes, the Kingsman.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ralph Fiennes ones.
Yeah.
He's got that. There's a lot of romance and a lot of heartbreak and a lot of ache and pain behind Freeze. Like, even though that wasn't his actual comic origin, like the adaptation that he got in Batman, the animated series.
Heart of Ice.
Oh, sorry. This is where you get Taff start breaking down Batman, and she gets real emotional because these characters mean a lot. But that particular episode redefined him, and that is such a poignant, beautiful, like, again, sympathizing with the villain, because at the end of the day, he does everything for love. It's all for his, you know, fucking precious Nora. I'm like, God, can I have that, please? You know? And I feel like there has to be that sort of romance behind that character, but also, like, torment and, like, age and, like, wisdom. And I don't know. Like, I feel like Ralph Fiennes is in that air right now. You know, or Liam Neeson, but I feel like he's doing everything right now, so he's
Neeson's too edgy. There's too much of an edge to him, but with Ralph Fiennes, there's such a softness.
There's a bit of a softness,
There's a huge softness, but he's He's
a good
be
villain.
in. Oh God,
Red
he can be a
Dragon?
right.
Oh my God. Red
Schindler's
Dragon.
List. He was a
Yeah.
nasty bastard.
I know it doesn't
But he
take
could.
hard to be in that type of film, to be fair.
But also he can also soften it down. There is a lot of roles that he can kind of he can switch it. He can even in Schindler's List to a degree there was some kind of it wasn't the best softness, but it was the best we were going to get out of that person. Yeah, I like that actually. Mark Strong's good visually. I like the look of him, and but he's very English. He's way too English.
Yeah, I think, and Fiennes is too, but again, there's that soft subtleness because one of my favorite movies is In Bruges. And like, he is like, and I'm just gonna say, he's like, what is the other character like, but you're still a cunt, He
Yeah,
says
you can say that word, don't worry.
We're English, we don't mind.
It's allowed. Okay, like, I don't either. Like, it does not offend me
It's
at
my
all.
mother's favorite words, by the way, so.
I think of it as another word as like a jackass or a dickhead,
That's my
like
mom. Yeah, that's my
so
mom. My
that's
mom's the same.
But he's got that fire behind him to where he can be reserved and have a human conversation, but then all of a sudden that fire clicks in, and I think that's what we would need for Mr. Freeze,
I
is to
like
be able
that.
to have that conversation with whoever he's talking to and have that calmness, and then also have that trigger to fucking flip, because that's exactly what it does, and I don't know. But I
I
really
like
hope
it.
that we get that, and I would be sad if we didn't have Matt Reeves doing that. And for some reason, if that didn't work out, I think he would probably be one of the few that could adapt Heart of Ice. But then also, a lot of the Batman has been picked out from Sean Gordon Murphy's White Knight universe as well. And his take on Mr. Freeze that he did with Klaus Janson. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, that cover is just like the epitome of like, I'm holding the breath
Yeah.
from that. Oh, actually. It may be right over here. But because
You're
I
trying
am
to
like,
summon it now.
I
was
know,
gonna say
I
all my
know.
all my Batman comics are in the loft. That's not on the wall at the
Do
moment.
I have?
But yeah, it's interesting what you mentioned Heart of Ice though as well. That is a like I understand. I get what you're saying. It to me, it felt like a hard reset on the Freeze character, and like it was almost like this is going to be his like unofficial origin stories going forward. Because
Yeah.
again, that cartoon had no fucking right to be as hard or as good as it was. I remember watching it as a kid, being freaked out for two reasons. Because the censors in the UK didn't must have thought it was a cartoon. They must have watched it. It was the first cartoon I saw on children's TV with a swear word in,
What did they say?
because they told one of the goons told Batman to piss off. I was like,
Oh my
I was getting this. I was getting this
gosh.
is 9 o'clock on Saturday morning on UK TV.
You'd have been buzzing as a kid listening in
Kid,
that.
what did I say about but yeah, I Heart of Ice, we did when me and Jake were doing a Toons episodes, we were talking about cartoons, and that was one of the ones that we kind of broke down and talked about. It's just, as you said, it's cinema. That's it's pure cinema at its best. But seeing that done live action, it would be like a bit special. But again, trying to bring it into the Matt Reeves world as well, that would be interesting, because I love like everything to do with the Matt Reeves film, like Robert Pattinson Batman. I
He's
absolutely
so good.
adore
He
it's
was
like
so
I
good.
liked it. Like I didn't watch the vampire movie, the Twilight ones.
Twilight. I
I
liked it.
love the
Seen
fact that
nothing
you
about
called
them.
it the vampire movie. Oh, that was good.
I didn't watch that, but I have seen him in a lot of other stuff, and as soon as I saw him in The Lighthouse, I was like, "Oh." But then what was the other one? Like not the gyms movie, but the other movie that
Was it Mitch?
Happy Fast. Ah, shoot, I'll look it up in a second. But yeah, where he's just like all over the place. So I went and I watched his movies because I was like, okay, who's gonna be my Batman? And I was just like, this guy's got it. And he gave us the young stepping into my moody broody, telling Alfred essentially to go fuck himself. Like when I saw like how he treated Alfred, I was like, oh, that's
hurts.
amazing. Because I
It
mean, like, why wouldn't he? Like, and that's one thing that I don't think we see enough of is the interaction between young Bruce, except for he's baby Bruce, like, oh, young Master Bruce. But we've missed out on that year one and year two, where Bruce is essentially trying to figure out who he is. He's come back and he's trying to, and he doesn't have that connection with Alfred, but Alfred still kind of thinks that. So I really liked, Alfred has it. It's unconditional with Alfred. And so I really liked how they had that display of, that turmoil that they did have to go through before, because it wasn't just like, hey, here's a parade, Bruce is back, everything's cool. No, he fucking abandoned Gotham, you know? Like, yeah. He had to come back and face the music, and Alfred's the one to play it for him, and I just really love, I love them so much. Oh, yeah. I love it.
And as you said, it's like watching Batman make mistakes or not quite get it right first time, because there's so often that everyone thinks, oh, he's the perfect thing. Like, he is the greatest detective if you go by the comics, but still, he had to learn his trade, he had to learn where he was coming from. And again, he's thrown in against people that probably is above him, like, knowledge-wise or know how things work. And he's kind of, like, thinking as a go, and he's like, oh, like, that inner monologue at the start where it's kind of like, a little bit like film noir, a little bit Blade Runner at times, where you hear him talking about like fear and how like people in Gotham's scared of him and stuff like that, and how he meets them thugs and the brutality. And again, this is where I think a lot of people make mistakes when it comes to the Batman films. They don't make Batman as brutal as he is. This is a martial artist who's trained every single form of thing. He's taking people down and literally fighting people with pure rage, because seeing these parents gunned down in front of him has left that imprint on him. So he's kind of, I know it sounds bad, but he's unleashing that rage, but again, he knows where the line is. And I thought this film kind of towed the line perfectly. And I know I banged on about it so much, it gave us that Batmobile. Like, oh my God. Just that talk noise.
About, I needed like 3 or 4 cigarettes after that. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, whenever it came out of the corner and it's rallying and it's a charger.
Yeah.
And like, one of my favorite absolute all-time covers, I'm going to derail for just for a second to tie into the Batman number 20, which is the first appearance of that revamped, amazing Dick Springer Batmobile with like, it had a Batarang on the front with a shield. Oh my God. And that's, I remember the first time seeing that Batmobile like in print, and I was like, oh my God, this is my dream car. And then seeing something
seeing Taffin and barging down the street, and
I absolutely would be like, eh, eh. I would definitely do that. But seeing that in the movie and that growling, and then just kind of seeing all you just see are just like Bruce's eyes, and I was like, oh my God, it's about to get real. And it turned into this brutal chase scene, which was like very mafia, very noir.
Yeah.
And like Penguin's thinking he's just gonna do whatever, and he fucking comes through those flames. I squealed. I was like,
but they didn't just finish it there though as well. I love the aspect where you do the camera work where it shows you like upside down, like Penguin's viewpoint, and seeing that in pose, and like how fucking scary would that have been, seeing a man dressed like that just towering above you, and you having no control. Like, I don't care how badass or how much you've seen, that would have just been like, am I in hell? Have I passed away? What the fuck is going on now? But yeah, like, everything about that film just like resonated with me. And it's interesting you're saying no man's land, because that was the feel I was getting where I was coming from. But this was, to me, as close to year one like as we've had in Batman, like say in the films as well. I know they touched that on then the Batman 89, where they like got certain looks, and that was kind of like where I was driven from. I know like the Nolan verse Batman, that was very much like a very Frank Miller style as well. But this, to me, like, I love the Nolan ones. I think that was done well. I know Sam has issues with certain Batman with the Nolan ones, but
is it Bane?
Funny enough, she doesn't like the Dark Knight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we've had.
We can all be perfect.
Yeah,
she's 99% perfect.
But yeah.
Mind the Dark Knight. Frank Miller's Dark Knight is probably one of my favorite Batman comics of all time.
No, I'm talking about the movie, The Dark Knight.
Oh yeah, I can't stand it. Yeah, it's terrible. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot what the name of it was there for a second. Yeah. I can't stand Heath Ledger as a Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Can't. Don't get away with it. Can't. Don't get it. Don't understand it. We'll never understand it. I'm very sorry that he's no longer with us, but yeah, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I totally forgot what that movie was called. I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah. I do like The Dark Knight. I like Frank Miller's Dark Knight. Oh, that one.
Yeah, no, that Frank Miller's Dark Knight, that's a completely different tone. And
I love that comic.
Yeah,
but I think I've owned it like several times over.
And, well, they did pull a lot from year one with the movies, and it does have a little bit to do with, since Miller wrote that one, it still, you know, ties into The Dark Knight because it develops that relationship of Gordon and Batman. We actually see like the steps that kind of happened, and it is, of course, I absolutely love a gritty noir. That's my jam. Like, so Batman and The Shadow are like one of the same for me. Mm. Like, I also have a big fandom of The Shadow. I don't put it out there as much as Batman, but all this is Batman, and then all this over here is The Shadow and my other noir stuff, like The Green Hornet here. But most of it is The Shadow because I feel like there's... Anyways, they're the same.
Aesthetically, that movie is beautiful. Like, it is beautiful. I just, there's certain aspects of it that I cannot get away with. I do, however, love Batman Begins. For somebody who wants to be introduced to Batman, I feel like that's kind of a good gateway. But that's just, I'm not... I have learned in the how long we've been talking, I am not as good as knowledge, like on my knowledge of Batman than used to. So it's kind of like a good gateway, and it was almost my gateway as well. I remember my husband, how long we've been together? 18 years ago, he introduced me, because he is a huge, like, comic books is his thing and superheroes is his thing. He introduced me to Batman Begins. That's where it kind of starts. I knew Batman Returns. I didn't know Batman. Like, I didn't know what he was about until he introduced me to that movie. So I'll give Christopher Nolan that one. I like it.
I do love the Nolan verse. Like Natasha mentioned, I love Tom Hardy's Bane. I love that they changed the story, because it would have been difficult if they did do Bane's full origin, because I don't think that would have translated well on the big screen. Like, for a child born in prison due to his mom being attacked and stuff, it just doesn't really.
It's a big
well.
Grim, isn't it?
Yeah. That story is really hardcore. They did do a good job, and I do like Bane. I just want to insert, like, the only thing that I was frustrated with Bane is I couldn't understand him. Like,
Tom Hardy.
But I can understand him in other stuff, which is different. Like, I felt like it was just so muffled. And maybe it's one of those movies I need to actually hear with, like, headphones. But there were times where, even with captions, I was like, he didn't say that.
Okay. I totally understand that. Tom Hardy is, for me, I've started to appreciate him more. And I think it's since Peaky Blinders. Because I could understand him. I could actually pick out an emphasis. Like, I could hear the words he was saying. But every Tom Hardy movie is either a grunter or a mumbler.
I can do
it. There's no
grunts
in between.
The mumbles. But see, I've seen him, like, in commercials, and I've seen him do, like, what is it? Like, his different reels and stuff. I can understand what he's saying. So I don't know, maybe if it's just the directors, because at the end of the day, like, you're giving the directors what they want. So I never really blamed it on him. Like, oh, he sucks, because I can understand him elsewhere. I felt like they just went a little too heavy for people who stood in front rows of concerts for like 20 years of their life.
I think that's how I'm dead.
It's like, I have, you know, like, I remember leaving concerts and I'd be like, oh, everyone sounds like Minnie Mouse. That's not good, Taff.
No, I did the same 21 years ago. I stood in front of an amplifier for 6 hours and I've never been able to hear the same again. I'm deaf in one ear because of it.
I noticed that. I thought for sure my hearing would be the first to go. It's actually my sight, but eventually I will not hear as well as I would like to. And I recognize that as I get older. And I'm like, but man, those concerts were worth it.
Yeah.
I saw so many great shows front and center. Anyways, yes.
No, that's fine. It is interesting what you're saying about these accents, because I know, like, purposely Tom Hardy was, like, he's come in an interview and said he was asked to do a colonial British accent. That's where... I think the dialect and everything. Yeah, it was very much like oh yes, like if you think about League of Gentlemen, like Alan Quartermain would have been using type thing, a very like old fashioned type.
Oh, I can get what you mean.
He just said Alan Quartermain. Sorry, I love a good literature reference.
Yeah. I can say I'm showing me my nerd side out there, but but I'm a big Alan Moore fan though as well, so that's fine. That's where that comes from. But it's like old, like I'm an old hunter, like old fashioned, like that, like almost like it'd been overseas, like in South Africa for a certain while. That's like the kind of accent that they were going for.
Well, now you've said that, I kind of get it. Like now you've said it, but at the time
it is
it's
Sean
just
Connery.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Now, We just solved it. He was really just trying to channel Sean Connery in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
And he really failed.
Yeah. But I think it was a choice to make him a mercenary, but from where he was, that accent doesn't kind of like hit home. And I think a lot of the lines that he delivered were great, but because he was doing that accent, it kind of like went wah wah. But I still love it. It's still one of the best Batman fights. I've done a reel for it this week. Just took a little bit few things out. But when
it breaks his back.
Yeah. Like I love that storyline. Like I can't remember Nightfall, wasn't it? Nightfall the comic?
Yeah, no, it's Nightfall. So yeah. That led to him getting his back broken.
Yeah. And Paul I can't remember his name now. As a replacement Batman for a while, but
Jean-Paul,
that's the one.
Azrael.
Oh, I didn't like Azrael, but that again, I could just go on rants for that. But yeah, but
I could argue the other side, so we should do that. Because I love Bruce. Really quickly, because we do with the art, so we used to get a lot of the Azrael Batman art, and so I had to go, and so I actually found myself reading a lot more of his stuff as Bat, and I was just like, you know what? He did the shit Bruce would not do. Cool. And that's where my love for him came in. Like, he was not Bruce Batman. He was his own Batman, and he took the mantle. Very much like Jason Todd, they were like, you know what? We're going to take everything we fucking know, and we're going to make it our own. And I can appreciate that, but Bruce Wayne forever.
just to make it clear.
But, like I say, when they depicted that in the film, in the movie, that's how, in my head, if we're watching the panel by panel, that how Batman would get beaten, and like the lines he was using as well, saying victory has made you soft. It's like, oh fuck, he is victory has made you soft, Batman.
I'm not even going to attempt it.
How can you be serious when you're filming that?
But the thing is, though, to him, he would have been taking it so serious. Like this is Hardy all over. When he did Star Trek Nemesis, he thought that's it. He was going to break Hollywood with that movie, and he put everything into it, and because it flopped, he kind of like went, okay, that's not it. Then when Bane comes around, it's the same scenario. I'm gonna put everything into this character, and once again, he got the piss taken out of him because he goes too far. Mm-hmm. If he strips it back just a bit, it will work in his favor, and he did that perfectly in Peaky Blinders. He played a very character, like a very flamboyant character, but he kind of still managed to strip it back to where, one, you could understand him, two, you actually liked him, and three, he wasn't playing a historical person, because Tom Hardy is known for playing historical figures, and that's the only thing he's ever been good at. Sorry, I could go on it.
You'll get the Tom Hardy fans after you again, so don't worry.
But they've already came for me once in my time. I don't particularly fancy that again.
I had fun with Venom.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with Venom.
Like, I think, you know, like that's the, just kind of like the juxtaposition. Like, you know, there is like, I guess the whole point of, you know, what I say is it's what you can get from your actor as a director.
Yeah.
You put him in a situation like Venom, like that was fun, but yeah.
Because he was stripped back. He was stripped back. He was relaxed. He didn't have to. He feels when he plays a character of magnitude, he has to. It's got to be all or nothing.
I don't know. I think he did a good New York accent. Eddie Brock, like you see, I think he did all right. But I'll get
him. I mean, not like the accent wise, and that it all worked for him. But he did. There was not a great deal of effort that went into it. Mm. Not with the. And it probably comes down to costume as well. Like you know, he was dressed in Nemesis as Jean-Luc Picard. He's got the big vein thing on. He's kind of acting up to the costume that he's in. That's how I see it anyway. I was never Tom Hardy's biggest fan. I've learned to appreciate him a lot more I'm growing up.
But I do think the one thing that probably did lose, as I said, The Dark Knight Rises, is because they didn't, like, funny enough, you said it, they didn't use Venom as his power source. As like to help build him up.
Oh, the green stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, his super steroids.
Super steroids. That was kind of like, I would have interested. I know we got it in, was it Batman and Robin? Batman and Robin. Yeah. We got that being there. But I still would have been interested. Like they used the excuse that his mask was to take the pain or to mask, to help with that aspect. But they didn't really use it like the Bane mask as we've had in the past.
It was just a tool. It was just a thing. It was just, it was nothing. Like,
yeah.
you could have totally, your conversation never went to that.
Yeah.
The look of them did look fantastic. But I, when I picture Bane, I'm not picturing the one from that. It's from the video game.
Right.
That's my image of
Bane.
Oh,
right.
So,
the from Arkham Knight.
Yeah. So when I'm looking at Tom Hardy, I'm like, okay.
So I'm going to ask the question now. I did post it on Instagram earlier. Who is your favorite Batman?
Okay, so
let's see how Taffeta dissects this one.
Yes.
Up until the Batman, it was Michael Keaton, but I was blown away by Pattinson, that I absolutely love. I love his Batman, and they are two very different worlds, and I think both can be true, that Michael Keaton is the best Batman and that Robert Pattinson is the Batman. So, and here's the thing, like, if the Flash hadn't come out and we hadn't got the old man Bruce in a different world, and we didn't get that not redemption, but that reminder that Michael Keaton is still really badass as a Batman.
Yeah.
Like, Pattinson would be like, no question, I love Pattinson, but I hold them both in an equal balance, which is the best I can do, because I absolutely love Michael Keaton because of the nostalgia. But when I look back at those movies, they do not compare at all to the storytelling and the origin that we get with the Batman, because it's much better. It's better writing. It's better direction. It's a better interpretation and incorporation of Gotham. But Michael Keaton is so badass as a young Batman and as an old Batman. So I'm really sad we may not actually get him in the Reeves universe, because I would love to see him in an even a more dark, gritty world, a different world, a more cinematic world. Because I think
it'd be interesting.
I think if we ever got, you know, Terry, the Batman,
Terry Taylor,
John, I think he would be a good old man Bruce.
He's perfect for that now. I love the fact that during like the Spider-Man movie, when he was facing off Tom Holland versus the Vulture, he kept on whispering in his ear, I'm Batman.
It's been a while since I've seen that one. Like, his I don't know, his aura is amazing, but I feel like it's just hard for me to choose when it comes to.
It's a good answer though, like, you definitely give two sides of it.
it's one of those things, and it's just like picking a favorite Batman story or comic, or
picking your favorite child,
like, you know, like, I can go off into many comics and stuff, but I think the favorite artist for me, I think, still kind of goes back to Jim Aparo with Carmine Infantino, like the older stuff. The many deaths of Batman is one of my favorite comics ever, and that's, you know, Jim Aparo's run on that was just, it was a good take, and I like that there's a whole issue to where there's not even any written text or conversations. It's just Jim Aparo's art that tells that issue, and you just get to flip through it, and it's just so beautiful without the text. Text is good, but I feel like the many deaths of Batman is probably my favorite.
Put that on the list.
Jim Aparo, like, I like Neil Adams, I like, you know, the Jim Lee stuff.
Yeah.
I like the modern day Patrick Gleason doing stuff with, you know, Peter Tomasi is like one of my favorite writers for Batman in the modern time. So and
this is where my jealousy goes.
That's a lot of names.
This is where my jealousy goes into overdrive, because I know, like, with your line of work, you get to see or be around some just history of, like, say, these type of this character as well. I know you've posted images where you've been next to, like, original artwork and, like, original prints. It's like my brain just melts, but
I don't know a lot about a lot, but
I know the Batman.
And if you ask for my favorite Batman, I will give you my favorite voice is Kevin Conroy.
Yeah.
Although there are some really good ones out there. Jason Eccles did a really good job as well. Yes. But Kevin Conroy, You know, so I'll give you my favorite Batman in any universe and break it down a million ways why.
No, don't worry. I'm not going to like pin you down and say, no, you can only name one. That would be mean. But
I don't think that can work with with Batman and the history and the time he's been around. I don't think you can. It's so unfair to say, name your favorite Batman. Just one.
But that's the thing, though, because you can talk about so many different elements. It's like, who, like, because Batman is such a complex character. It's like, who's your. There's people who play Batman great, but they weren't so great as Bruce Wayne. But then there's amazing Bruce Waynes and not so great Batman. Or there's great Batman and they're not in great movies or great like episodes. Like George Clooney is absolutely outrageously good as Batman and as Bruce Wayne. He's probably one of the more complete double acts that you'll get. He's just in that movie. That's the bad...
That's the problem.
And the movie wasn't that bad. It was just... choices that were made. But if you had that in, like, again, Clooney gets a lot of like shit, but when you watch it back, he not has bad. One of the best looks. He as Bruce Wayne, he has the smarminess, he has the intelligence that, like, say, not like a younger Bruce, but an older Bruce probably could have had. Michael Keaton has the crazy factor, the interesting, like Bale.
I gotta throw in Batfleck. We can't forget Batfleck.
Batfleck, no. Like he...
I have no issue. I really liked him when he got me too. There should have been more. There was so much more to develop with him. Yeah. When they announced that it was going to be Ben Affleck, I was like, fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, why not?
Same.
Like, why not?
And I got excited for him as well, though, because when you hear his interviews and stuff, like when he done Daredevil, he said, I'm doing Daredevil because they'll never let me do Batman.
That was the reason. He was like, I'm never going to be able to do Frank Miller's Batman because that's all he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And he was like, but I can do Frank Miller's Daredevil. They're letting us do that. Mm-hmm. So that's why he went off and did it. But I was so bummed out for him when he was like, oh, well, that's it. His Batman journey is over.
But and I will stand and fight for Batman versus Superman. I think that is a top tier superhero film. Like, I've got no problems with it.
Again, I like the Snyder stuff. I liked the Avengers.
The Justice League.
Like, very wrong universe.
The formation, my brain's farting. Yeah. I was like, the formation, the super group. What is it called?
The Super Friends.
Yeah. Like, I thought it was fun. I thought it was fun for what it was. I loved the interaction. I loved all the characters. Mm. I love how they came together, because I think it's very difficult to put all those characters together, and they did the best they could with what they could with who they were working with, despite all the flaws.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Cavill and Batfleck, and I really wish we could have had just one more, like a World's Finest with them, you know, like if it was like, I don't know, World's Finest, the comic itself, like when it first came out, it was Batman Jr. and like Superman Jr. That was their names. It was ridiculous. So there's an opportunity to have like a World's, you know, Finest with the young people. Mm-hmm. If we ever get a Damian, because we haven't even talked about my boy Damian.
Oh, yes.
Gosh.
I love him. I love him so much.
So Damian Wayne for me is Teen Titans, and he annoyed the shit out of us in it, so...
I love the interaction with Damien and Bruce, because it's such a petulant child. Like, no one, the way he's been trained as well. Because if you think about it, he's a kid that's been living and breathing the League of Shadows.
He's a test tube baby.
Yep. Yeah.
A petri dish baby.
And he knows it. And he holds it against everyone. He's just... Teen Titans, because I love the cartoon Teen Titans. And I didn't mind the live action one. I thought it was good. It just kind of... We kind of dropped off. It got a bit... boring and Sammy, but Damian always is a whiny little bitch.
You gotta find the people who eventually like evolve him, like with the when he became like the Robin and Batman with Robin and off a Nightwing, like that whole like 2008-2009 run is where he kind of grows and he becomes like this person. And then they have this whole like death of Robin, you know, the Requiem for Damian, where like Batman finds
himself without
Ooh, goosebumps. That's one of the most heartbreaking.
Who wrote that?
That's Peter Tomasi as well, right. I believe. Because I believe him and Patrick Gleason, like they had the whole caboodle of it. So they were doing the Super Sons and they were doing the Batman and Robin for a little bit.
It was such a thing though, wasn't it? Like that was very, it was very talked about at the time. I remember that. And I was like, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, well, because it follows, to kind of, you know, get into this stuff, like the Grant Morrison, you know, Batman Incorporated run, because we have a brilliant stuff from, you know, Grant Morrison there for a while as well. You know, he kind of returns to, you know, Batman and Batman and Son. So I've grown to adore him, and have had this conversation with many people, and that's kind of my hill to die on, that Damian Wayne is the best Robin. Yeah. Like, Nightwing is completely different. Dick Grayson is Nightwing to me.
Damian, there's a separation there.
That's the best Robin, because he has been written to grow eventually. Someone let him grow. And then when he winds up getting paired in Super Sons with a modern day Jonathan Kent, that formation and that bond and that juxtaposition, like, Jonathan Kent, like, rubs off on Damian. And you see that happening so much, to where Damian eventually starts calling him out on that. You're rubbing off on me. So, although he did start out as a whiny little bitch, I just had to kind of throw that in there. Like, if you read some of his other stuff, it's so rewarding to see him go from this brat to where he's at now, to where he's still a brat, but he knows he's a brat, and he's very self-aware, and they've given him growth in modern days.
No, definitely. And they try and do that with a lot of the characters as well, because the Bat family, like through the years, has grown, has spread, and as you said, some people do get the time to shine, some people have the moments, shall we say, but Damien's kind of like one where it's kind of good. Like, Dick is, as you said, Dick will always be Dick, and it was great what they did with him, moving him from the Robin to the Nightwing, which is, again, they don't normally do with certain characters, because, like, with comics and stuff, normally you stay ageless, you don't really age. So to give them that, like, fluidity to move him forward in that, I think, and become his own hero, and, like,
he just wanted to be himself. You know, he was tired of dealing with a moody Bruce, essentially, at this point, you know.
And then you have the people you feel sorry with like Jason Todd. Is like
Jason Todd,
who now is just one of the most confusing characters in the world with the Red Hood. It's like, are you a nice guy? You're a good guy, or are you just a dick?
He doesn't even know. No. One too many lumps to the head and face, and you know, this is the post-traumatic, you know, result of it. You know, he's. But I mean, he will stand up to Bruce like nobody's business.
No.
Oh, yeah. And the only thing is, when I read him, I can only hear Jensen Ackles.
Yeah.
I can only hear his voice in my head.
That's such a good movie.
Oh, so good. That's my little thing is, I've probably seen the DC animated movies probably more than I've seen the actual in real life ones.
No, yeah. I'm there with you for a while. Like, it was way better, so I get it.
Yeah.
Nope, but is there a, like talking about the comic side of it as well, because, like I say, this bit's getting us a bit too excited, sorry. Which storyline do you want to see, like, from the bat, like, say, from the archives, or even more recent, what do you think would be a good story to tell? I know we've talked about Heart of Ice, but again, that's, like, say, from the anime, but animated show, sorry, but from the comics, which storyline would you like to see brought to life? Or do you think would do well, shall we say? Because there's some that's very convoluted, like Hush is good, but it's so complicated to get right.
And they already did that, and they kind of changed it up, which is as far as, like, animated movies go.
I got upset when they changed that up. Yeah, sorry.
If we're talking, like, an animated movie, I would really kind of like to see some of the Dark Knight Metal stuff that I would like to see more, like, Greg Capullo art come to an animated movie. Yeah. Like, the whole Batman Who Laughs and their whole, like, you know, the
bad flap and stuff like that.
Like, dealing with stealing the Speed Force, and you've got, you know, they're all their cautionary, complimentary villains that they have, and that it's all something different. But again, for me, it's little Damian Wayne Devil Spawns.
Right.
That's what I want to see. But I feel like that does a really good job, and I would like to see more of the Batman Who Laughs. So that's why I think that would be a fun series to have as far as, like, the animation goes, because it's a lot of I don't know. It's like horror mythology, and it's like heavy metal, you know, and it's like, I don't know. It's a dark multiverse. And I feel like that would kind of be neat animation.
It'll be a lot for people to take in. But I remember the metal came out. What was it? To me, it feels like 6 months ago, but it was probably about, was it 5, 6 years ago? it came out.
It was like at the. It was yeah. It was like 2017.
It was just before the pandemic, I think.
Hit, oh my years. God! I own yeah. it. Is it a black with red cover?
There's one with the like. Ones. There's a few one. There's one with like this crown, but it starts off.
Yeah, I
off
own
with,
it. Oh yeah. my God, I've never read it though. I own it.
Because the episodes afterwards had like a Batman from a different world, but like had different powers, like Green Lantern's powers, the Flash's powers.
It was the Red Death. Yeah,
the Red Death.
Was like Batman and Doomsday was like Devastator. The Drowned was Bruce Wayne and Aquaman. So it was, it was all these different incorporations of Bruce Wayne, but like in these villain roles of like other superheroes from like, you know, the other universe. It's so like Murder Machine. Like it was Batman and Cyborg. Like, what the fuck? It was all over the place. It's so bonkers. You know, and there's this kind of corruption of Bruce Wayne a little bit that's in there, which we don't see in a normal mythos because that's what he's fighting against. So anyways, I think for animated, I'd like to see the Dark Knights, the metal stuff and incorporated into something because doing the samurai stuff. So give me the horror. Give me horror.
Yeah. If they are going to do the animated stuff, just stop changing the endings to them. I know they've got like changed it up to try and keep fans happy, but they're making big, bold changes. Like, I think the only one, like, the one that did upset me like a lot was the Killing Joke. The animated
one. Oh my god, that was so bad.
Where they had like Barbara pretty much like rape Dick Grayson or Batman. Or
yeah, it was Bruce.
Yeah,
it was Bruce.
Yeah,
it was
Bruce. Yeah.
It was Bruce. It was Bruce.
No, I'm thinking of Harley. She's the one that like.
Yeah.
I guess it happens both ways, but yeah.
I was so very upset. I was so excited for that to come out because Killing Joke, when I started my comic book journey, Killing Joke was the second book that I read, and I was so excited. I'm a huge Alan Moore fan, and they ruined it. What did they do to my Barbara? That's the second time someone has put their hands on Barbara and made me not like her.
Yeah.
No, I was not amused.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other time?
Alicia Silverstone. I had some choice words for her.
Yeah, that was weird because she wasn't technically Barbara Gordon. She was.
Well, that's how I get around it in my head.
Yeah.
But she like called herself Barbara.
And I think that was more like, for fans just to throw that in there. But like, there is like an actual arc where like Alfred's granddaughter does come to live with him. I can't think of her name right now, and she does become like, you know, involved in that. And so it was really weird how they like threw everything.
That's fine.
Together.
Just don't. Yeah, but that was not Barbara. No, that's not my Barbara. I was so mad, so mad. But not at Alicia Silverstone. I will never not be mad at. Like, I can't be. That girl went through far too much at that time anyway. But yeah, I was so upset with that version of Killing Joke. I really thought like. It's one of them times where you're like, oh, Alan Moore was right. Should never have adapted his shit into, like... It's like, damn it. Because it's always the case when Alan Moore's stuff comes out, you're always looking for that one that's going to turn it. Like, is that going to turn his head? Is that going to make him go, oh, this is okay? That one was not a good example.
I think, again, similar with a lot of different comics, like sexualizing the character or making them, like, do certain things that's not with... the character or thing for no reason. It was just like, this just feels awkward for me. And again, watching that back, like, I think I only give that a one watch. I was like, this is not the Killing Joke I remember. I know like the graphic novel was only a short one, but still had more impact. The story probably is not animate, but live action. It probably gets touted around all the time now. The Court of the Owls. I think that is
in
keeping with everything that's going on with the Bat Universe as well, and especially with how the world is at the moment, not to get political or anything like that, but I think it can feed into how the world is kind of feeling. And I think like I said, especially like the Scott Snyder like graphics and it was Batman. It was the 52 run, wasn't it?
It was the new 52. I've read it. What's Frank's surname? It's with Scott Snyder and Frank. Frank, the artist? I can't think of his name.
My brain's not gonna.
Capullo.
Oh, Greg Capullo.
Greg, that's it. Why do I keep calling him Frank?
Well, because like Frank quietly did a little bit of Superman and like some stuff for DC as well, and so there's so many people.
Greg.
Yeah, because Greg Capullo, because they're actually going to be in Dallas in a couple of weeks.
Oh my God, that's exciting.
We'll be doing some panels. I'm very excited for that. But to get to the Court of Owls. I do like that, because the only time we got something like that was very briefly, it was also Gotham. Animated. It was animated. It was yeah. in the Batman and Robin animated movie. And I remember seeing that and being like, fuck yeah, we need more of that. Mm-hmm. And they alluded to some of that with like Riddler in the Batman, you know, like how he kind of was like exposing some of these like elite undergrounds. And I would like to see Reeves continue something like that. That would be cool.
And if they're going to bring like characters like Dick Grayson as Nightwing and stuff into this type of universe and have that kind of like backstory where he was meant to be a Talon as well. Like they were called Talon. Like my brain's just frozen at the moment. Like that whole like counterpart and like actions, how they've got these assassins that's on ice. It just everything seems like a cool superhero aspect to it, and like also what blends in, like again, what I kind of like about it blends into the real world and like the gritty world as well, like the nastiness. But I just think it. Things, and I know like say sorry to jump from one thing to the other, but just when we were talking about before, like with Batman and Superman, the way that got announced at San Diego Comic-Con with them reading that dialogue from The Dark Knight, like Frank Miller's Dark Knight, like
Clark, one of my favorite announcements.
Like I still remember like watching the bootleg footage of that, because with us being in the UK, we don't get fun shit like that. I'll be honest with you.
No, we have to watch it through someone's phone and then on YouTube, and you know times really haven't changed that much because we still do the same now. And I remember that was born, like that was chilling. That was like that was such a moment. I can't even remember the guy who read it out as well. His voice was just perfect.
He played one of the army officers in the movie as well. But I know we go to Comic Cons and stuff in the UK, and it's very much different. Taffeta,
much different.
I remember living vicariously through you. I don't know if it was, I remember it was last year or the year before, when you went to Comic-Con and literally your stories give me life each day that you were there. What
is that, San Diego?
Yes, that's the one.
That was last year. That was my first San Diego Comic-Con experience, and I don't think I'll ever top that again. That was a whole nother level. That was like fairy tale, like fucking princess type shit. I felt ridiculously taken care of. It was great.
And again, I know we're talking about Batman, but just like about that experience as well, because that is on my bucket list to ever go. One of my friends has been lucky enough. I know probably the price ranges is now, it's probably a lottery win to get there type thing. But as you said, what is that experience like? I know you said you were very well taken up, but is it literally everything that we dream of as nerds?
Is it
the Mecca?
But I think a different experience than maybe some people go out there for, because I by the time I landed there, like I was getting recognized, which is very weird for me. Like landing in an airport, the whole time I was there, and I don't really like try to brag a whole bunch, but this was really sweet for me, like because everywhere I went, I met like at least 3 or 4 people who were like, oh, I follow you, can I get a photo? And I got to meet people, and that was really important to me, because it was people who I've been interacting with for like 10 or 15 years on social media that I've never met in person, you know. And so that was kind of the aspect for me, like it was very comic centric, because I got to meet Tom Taylor finally and Joelle Jones, and I got to meet, you know, I got to meet Jill Thompson. I went to the Eisners. Like, it was very comic centric. And no, you don't have to remember it. Like, I'm stammering because it was just, it was everything that I had been wanting for so long in the comics realm, you know. And I got to finally meet, you know, a lot of people and get a lot of comics signed.
Oh my gosh.
Bruno Redondo. Like, I have a whole bunch of Nightwing like prints that I got signed finally by my favorite Nightwing writers ever, who I would never have met in Texas because they don't come to Texas because they're overseas. So it was that, but paired with, hey, there's this thing going on, come over, you know, don't worry about it, you know, go have fun. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? I felt like goddamn Cinderella.
Oh my god, I would have hugged Jill and never let go.
Yeah. That was
that would have been a huge problem for me. I would never let go. I love that woman so much.
That's always like that gets me excited. But the only problem is, again, the way conventions work in the UK now, it is so movie and TV show centric.
Yeah, like, we have one event.
Mm-hmm.
We have Thought Bubble.
Yeah, which don't really have many like comic book writers or comic book artists, which is a sad thing because in the UK we are huge fans. We've I don't know if people think there's not like say like a thing. I remember Dave, I think it's Dave Gibbons who did the artwork for V for Vendetta and stuff. Like I met him, I was like bouncing off the wall, like saying, "Oh," because he drew us a picture of V, and it was like just everything. Oh, cool. But now it's just like you go to a convention. It's great because there's people from like Red Dwarf there. There's people from this TV show. There's wrestlers, but there's no comic book artists in the UK when it comes to that type of aspect anymore, which is a bit sad. But it is a dream. It is on my bucket list to ever always get to San Diego. I will get there one day, even if it's like just got to sleep on the street and just like watch out.
I would suggest if you really want to meet comic artists and you don't want to break your budget, go to C2E2. Like that is by far the best convention I've ever been to that celebrates comic artists. They've got the celebrities, but comic artists, it's probably at least like 60 rows and they are front and center because it is a huge event to where if you're not at San Diego, like you're at C2E2. It's not the same weekend.
I didn't realize C2E2 was still a thing. I thought that ended.
Yeah, and it's Chicago, so it's a little bit less pricey than California. But that's just a thought, and that's just because the reason why I'm so in love with it is because of the comic artists and the people they bring out are like legends. Like I got to hang out with Kevin Maguire, who I'd never been able to meet before, you know, him and I wound up smoking, you know, in front of the hotel until 2 a.m. talking about, you know, Justice League, blowjobs and like all kinds of random stories. And, and that was me. I was like, well, what about this? It was very much a mall rat scene about, you know, the Hulk, how can you do this? And,
so you're telling us you're the Brody in this conversation now.
Yes, all the patience. Like that's what I turn into at night. If you ever wanted to know what it's like to hang out with me at a comic convention, like I would be like, all right, so let's talk about this character. And I had been very tired and very ready to get home, but then around the corner Ben Temple Smith comes out and
Kevin is
there, and then Sean Gordon Murphy's there, and I'm just like, well, all right, we're gonna pretend we're 15 again. And I wore my
Ben Temple Smith's art is just absolutely unreal. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, absolute. So anyways, just San Diego is something I would encourage everyone to experience, because I was encouraged to experience and I did. But for the continuation of supporting artists and like seeing different artists every year, I would continue to go to C2E2 because it's not like 200,000 people or 3,000, whatever it is, you know.
It's a lot of people.
Whatever the San Diego people populace is compared to C2E2 is different, but I feel like for comics you get more comic stuff. So
we do have one. We have Thought Bubble Festival, which has had some really big names attached to it in the past.
Gail Simmons was there last year, I think.
Jamie McCalvery is always there. Babs Tarr, I've met her a couple of times. She was an absolute delight. She's a something on the eye. Like you can't not stare at her. She is absolutely beautiful.
She's delightful.
Oh gosh, I can't remember what others. There's so many that I've met.
To be fair though, I'm the nervous one in the corner that doesn't bother talking to everyone, because I'm just like, nope, social anxiety, I'll hide from everyone.
I could not say anything to her. There's one of them who was doing I can't even remember what book it was now. I want to say it was something very D&D, and Fowler or something like that. Anyways, I was so enamored by the fact that I was standing in front of her talking to her, and I'm reading her book, and I'm so excited. I forgot to pay her for merch. Completely forgot. And she was so polite as well. She could have like screamed at us and chased us down, and it wasn't until I went, I still got the money in my hand, hang on a minute, and had to go back over and talk to her. Tessa.
Oh, yeah.
You know who I mean? I can't think of
it. I do. I follow an artist named Tessa as well, and she's delightful. She's got blonde hair.
That's going to annoy the shit out of us. Keep talking.
I'm familiar with that name. I think you're right with maybe a Tessa Fowler. So, I've seen some banners.
So I think I know what your answer is going to be to this one, but I'll ask it anyway, because like I said, like there was a few things I wanted to ask. So if someone's listened to this podcast and never picked up a Batman comic at all, what would you say would be the great starting point, or the one that you would say to go first with?
Oh man,
an entry level Batman, shall we say?
Well, because like all the ones that I would suggest, I'm like, well, now I need to read this. Well, that there's this.
Yeah.
I would suggest they just go watch Batman the Animated Series.
Right. And that is a great suggestion.
If you were wanting to get into Batman, I would start at this age, any age. Go watch a couple episodes of Batman the Animated Series, get a feel for it, and then jump into Batman Year One. And then I would take on some Neil Adams stuff, because Neil Adams' era is where he really gets gritty. This is like before he became, the brooding person he is now. This was, before The Dark Knight, because we were coming out of like a very campy stage. Mm-hmm. So a couple episodes of Batman Animated Series, and then jump into a Neil Adams run, and I think you'll be okay from there, because some of those stories aren't arcs. Mm-hmm. They're a lot of self-contained stuff, so you can kind of like get those issues. But and then the Jim Lee stuff.
Jim Lee's artwork is just some beautiful, beautiful works. Yeah,
like, yeah, his run with Miller, I think that would be good. I think The Dark Knight would probably be just after you've probably
bedded in a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't do that. I went from Killing Joke straight into probably my favorite Batman book of all time, which is Arkham Asylum, which messed me up. I didn't know comics could do that. I didn't realize that's what it could do. And then I went into Frank Miller's Batman, and I'm like, I just took jump after jump after jump. And then I just go to Paul, give me another one. And he just shoots a name at us, and I'm in it straight away. Mm-hmm. Arkham Asylum is one of my favorite books of all time. I have owned that digitally for years, and only picked up last Free Comic Book Day my first actual copy of it.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I love it. I do like Killer Croc's run and some of that. Mm. If I'm thinking right, it's been a while since I've read that one.
It has been for me, but I just remember it always stuck with me how beautiful, how weird it was, how we shouldn't be reading books where I'm having to spiral them around, because it was so unusual for us. I'd literally only read a couple of books before I got into that, so I was like, this isn't right. This is weird. Who is this person? Now, like, he is my spirit animal. I love Grant Morrison so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Nope. Thank you. I think that'll be
it. Nice.
Me. I always say the same thing. I always say that if you want to get a feel of what Batman is, or how to, if you're going to love Batman, is the Long Halloween. I love the artwork. I had the original comics a while ago. Like I said, I don't have them in possession anymore because I had to sell them. But like the graphic novel and just like the intertwining story and how you get to find each character, and if you start like kind of like it's one way you actually fall in love with the Batman, shall we say? And I think it's the basis what a lot of the movies, like I know the Nolan's ones, you can probably extract certain aspects to like that storyline in there, and also in the Batman with Robert Pattinson, even though it's like Batman Year One, there's still a lot of like the Long Halloween feels to aspects. So I think it's kind of like the other one would the other one is probably
if you want all in there.
If you want to again want to read a fun Batman that's just hilarious, is just Hush. I think Hush,
Hush
is just, that's why, again, when they messed up the ending towards it in the animated cartoon, but the comic is just so much fun. It's like, if you want to go on a ride and just literally go, it's like Batman murder mystery. It's just absolutely hilarious.
It's a really nice throwback to his origins of being like a true detective. Plus all the villains and stuff, you know, like all the various villains that we get from that.
Yeah.
You've got me kind of like amped up. Like you've kind of like, it's been such a long time that I've had like, I know I do the Marvel watch along, and it's great to talk about the, you know, Marvel comics, but I probably read more Batman than I have ever read, or even, indie comics, Image comics. Like, they are the comics that I used to read, and I'm like, oh, I really miss that. Like, I really miss that side of us. I feel like I want to go back and just go and have a look at everything that I've,
Fuck
like,
yeah.
yeah. Oh,
But
I miss it.
I think with Batman as well, and I think this would be a nice way, like a way just to end it as well. It's basically, I think, as comics wise or like the character wise, it's the most relatable like superhero out there. It is the one where it has the more layers. It has the more like interesting bad guys as well. There's so many jumping in points where you can jump in and just enjoy Batman. You can either go back all the way to the start where it's like I said, corny, wacky, funny. It's literally got a character for
Wacko,
everyone. Like that's where like Superman's great, but a lot of people do find it hard to relate to Superman because it's a perfect figure. It's
wacko.
a character that is almost too perfect in a way. So it's like kind of like, oh, I don't relate to that character because how can anyone be so wonderful and amazing and unstoppable? Where Batman has his
Well, it's
flaws.
hard, but we try.
Batman has his flaws. He has his weaknesses. He has his humanity. And again, I think that's why people always will go back to Batman and always like kind of have that shining hope when there's news of a new Batman or a new thing. It gets that excitement leveled up. And like even when they bring a new comic out, the different tales, like the last one I read was probably like it was a few years ago, was probably the one where they start leading up towards Bruce and Selina's wedding, and that went all weird. But then like say it was the Riddler
Gotta
Wars, was
love
it?
Tom King.
Yeah. Oh, Tom King storytelling. I think he was like stopped off before it was going somewhere interesting. But again, but all different aspects to it. You can go leave Batman, you can go in. There's now like Gotham by Gaslight, there's the Samurai Batman, there's like different aspects of Batman that keeps on coming out and people will keep going to it. And there's something that draws you to it because I think it's the human side to it as well. But again, that's just my humble opinion.
No, Gotham by Gaslight is absolutely one that I think is fun. It's a short read. It's Mike Mignola going out there doing, like, his art, and we've
Steampunking,
it, yeah, and it's perfect and it's so interesting. And I think the animated movie did a good job following that.
Yes,
That's
no,
awesome.
John. No, cool. So while we're wrapping up as well, because I know you are the busiest lady in nerdism,
Yes.
so
Oh
tell
no, this
it.
has been delightful. Thank you.
Yep, so tell us what you've got up to coming up soon. Tell us a few things that we can catch you like on your socials and stuff like that.
I do my Monday night gaming every Monday at 9 p.m. Central Time at twitch.tv/taffetadarling. That's pretty much where I get to actually engage and relax and have some fun with the community. So if you guys are free, just come hang out or lurk, put me on in the background. It still helps promote me and support me. You can even mute me if you don't like listening to my voice and you just want to look at me. I get that people do that. Trust
I
me.
can listen to you all day, to be honest.
Thank you. I have Texas Frightmare Weekend next weekend. Although I'm not moderating any panels, I've got some people that I'm meeting out there, and I'll be working doing other stuff. So I'm excited for that. I've got Fan Expo the following weekend, and I'm super excited for that because this is one of the biggest comic lineups that we've had. They keep getting bigger, and I have a lot of friends who are coming to town, and I do the panels. I moderate the comics panel, so I'll be doing that. Next month is Big Texas Terror. Which is a kind of a subsidiary of Big Texas Comic Con that I work at the end of the year. So they've decided to branch out, rightfully so, with a first year horror show. And so I'll be down there in June, doing that. And
All
then,
right.
yeah, so that's for the next few weeks.
Cool. Be interesting to see some pictures for the horror one. I know because Sammy was doing a horror podcast. She might, if you've got time, to ask you a few questions about that
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you guys will be like, well, I love chatting with y'all. Like, I can chat about this shit all day long. So thank you for letting me.
I can listen to it. Sorry.
Yes. But
Yeah,
yes. So this will go out on Sunday. I'm trying to think what day it is. So
Sunday.
tomorrow there is no monsters because Sammy and Dan is taking a day off. But next week
Yeah.
monsters is back,
Yes.
and these are doing Ghost Ship. Is that right?
Is it right? Yeah.
I love that movie. That's so underrated. That opening scene is so fucking brutal.
It's the only thing I know about that movie so far. Yes, due to unforeseen circumstances, we had to cancel this week's episode, but we are back next week with Ghost Ship. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. We have covered some movies that are along the same lines production-wise, so it'll be interesting to see the difference.
And next Sunday, we are finishing off our guest month. We have the lovely Kelly from the Game of Thrones Historians. She is coming to talk.
We love Kelly.
We're changing up a little bit. We're not talking Game of Thrones with her. We're talking Hunger Games. So
I'm going to take over that episode. I have a lot to say. He hasn't read the last book.
No.
It's gonna get messy. I'm just putting it out there.
I love it.
And we've got a lot of other shows. I think Top Grumps are doing Itchney the Serial Killer. I probably butchered that. We have Anime Club for Anime Friday next week. That's come out. We've had the Women of Nerd Culture that released an episode on Saturday morning just gone, where they've talked about their love and their things of General Lear. So,
yeah, there will be a Marvel episode out on Saturday, because right, okay. I am recording that on Tuesday, and we are Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
So a lot of things, a lot of content. Like, join us on our channel. If you like us, give us a like. If you don't, tell us you don't like us. We can have a conversation. It'll be fine. But just to say a big thank you to Taffeta. Like, say thank you for everything that she does for us. I know, it's only little thing. It feels like little things, but it means the world to us. It's great to have, such a nice friend. Yes.
Thank you for being a friend.
I'm super happy to help. I love seeing y'all get to do all those things overseas. It's so great. Anything I can help or give or pass along, when one of us shines, all of us shine.
That's great.
That's my favorite quote. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to go anywhere and leave anybody behind. If I can bring everybody with me, I absolutely will. If I get something that I think someone else will like, it's yours.
That's 2 weeks in a row we've had the same message. Mm-hmm. We're all in this
community.
Together.
It's community. Yeah. You know, like, I'm not here to be better than anybody else. I'm here to be my best person, and no one is my competition. We are just out here doing and enjoying the same shit. So I'm absolutely happy to help you.
Oh, bless you.
Love it.
So to end the one, this is probably the first time that my actually saying does actually make sense. So same bat time, same bat channel.
Stay nerdy, everyone. Bye.
Thank y'all.